The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. The temple is an affiliate of Boundless Way Zen, a multi-lineage school of Zen Buddhism.
Case 60 from the Book of Serenity. The Preface. Head held high with excellent character, stepping firm and true. Be ready to learn Zen from this old woman. Be seen through and obtain the unattainable opportunity. Only then will you have met a true master of the way. Yet say, who exactly is this person? Iron Grindstone Liu went to Guishan. Guishan said, old cow, you've come. Liu said, there's going to be a great assembly at Taishan. Will you go too? Guishan lay down. Liu went out. The verse, outstanding victories in hundreds of battles, now experiencing great peace. Easy going, who would be willing to struggle for power? The jade whip and the golden warhorse are idle all day. The cool breeze and bright moon are abundant throughout one's life. So this very short encounter here, so little information is given. And in our tradition, we are encouraged to dream into the moment of the encounter. And of course, this is all we're doing. Day after day with our partners and friends, parents and children, we dream into who they are, who we think they are. And we dream into who they think, we think they might think, that we think, that they think. And so we wander through the weeds. And these encounters, Zen encounters. We have case after case of some kind of meeting happening. And although it appears that our Zen way is about some kind of solitariness, it is actually fully relational. The way arises as we encounter something. We encounter sensations. We encounter people. We encounter thoughts. Again and again, the wonderful thing is that, of course, life is just one thing after another until no thing. And after that, who knows? Guishan apparently dreamed of being a water buffalo. He was hoping that after he died, he would be reincarnated as one of the water buffalo down in the village. Quite a lofty aspiration for a Zen master. and so we all have dreams. Of who we might be. We have dreams of who we are. And in this encounter between two Zen adepts, Iron Grindstone Liu and Guishan, they get together for an encounter. Maybe this is the Zen kind of party, the kind of party that maybe of us like. A very quick, brief, to the point, and I can go home. Thank you very much. Nice party. I'll come again next week. And so these wonderful Zen masters don't have to talk about Buddha. Right? They don't have to discuss philosophy. They are not fooled by the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. They are not fooled by Zen and any idea of accomplishment. They are not fooled by the moment. But each one presenting fully. And it's wonderful to be looking into this koan, because I guess many koan are like this, but hard to find a way in. What's going on here? How could there be meaning here? But yet, as we slow down, how could there be meaning here? I'm just cutting apples for the morning stew. How could there be meaning here? I'm just feeling lonely. How could there be meaning here? I'm just upset. Nothing's happening. I'm stuck. I'm not making any progress. How could there be meaning here? But this teaching and our practice is to see what happens if we allow ourselves to be where we are. In reading this this morning, I'm so struck in the preface. Head held high with excellent character, stepping firm and true. A wonderful presentation. So we might think the Zen way is some kind of passivity or playing it safe. Well, I'm kind of mostly emptiness myself. I'm not really, but not getting lost in that. But each one of us in each moment is called upon to meet the moment. And so here you meet the moment by playing the role, by bowing when the bell sounds. And we get to bow, and we get to walk, and we get to clean the toilets with full commitment, with head held high. It is a wondrous thing to be a human being, a blessing beyond imagining. Of all the life forms in the world, in the universe, you and I have come together. In a sense, somehow we are borrowing the materials of the universe, borrowing a little stardust and a little lot of water and some other minerals, and somehow we are together. I was going to say we're holding ourselves together, but you are not holding yourself together, right? You are held together. Life is lifing in the form of you. You think it's your life. Really? Who is the one who owns this life? When we look deeper, we see this life is given, is present, is here, is particular, is not general. You are not living some kind of general philosophical life. You are living a particular life. Each moment an unusual set of circumstances, right? Whatever they are. Just happening now, and each particular set of circumstance includes everything that came before and everything that will come after. Where is the meaning here? Right, head held high, stepping firm and true. Be ready to learn Zen from this old woman. Be ready to learn Zen from this old woman. Of course, the old woman is you and me, right? Each one of us, ourself, and each moment, each one that comes before us. Be ready to learn Zen from the pain in your knees. Be ready to learn Zen from the confusion. We say sometimes that these exact circumstances contain everything you need to wake up. Nothing is lacking. Be ready to learn. And then he says, be seen through. Be seen through and obtain the unattainable opportunity. I'm so struck by this encouragement to allow ourselves to be seen. Allowing yourself to be seen. All of us, it seems to me, whatever categories we occupy, whatever social status, whatever gender identification we have, most everyone I know, I would say everyone I know, including myself, at some level believe it is not safe to allow myself to be seen. And so we have put on ourselves, put on the armor of I am this person, and don't you dare contradict that. Them's fightin' words. We defend this notion of who we are. And yet here in the safety and in the intensity of the Zendo, we get to melt down a little bit the armor that we have so carefully articulated around our body begins to soften. Little holes appear, and we can take little steps, we can practice. What is it like to sit in the Zendo from this sitting firm and true? As myself, not as who I wish I would be or wish I were. And just to say parenthetically, I am very grateful that you are not who you think you should be. All of you would be insufferable if you were who you thought you should be. Thank goodness that you are you in the fullness, in the light and in the dark. There is a gift beyond measure in the fullness of each one of us. And so to take a chance in the middle of Zazen to open your chest, to open your belly, and to allow yourself to be seen. This is some direction we can notice how we hide. And so in our posture, each one of us, of course, expressing our full self. Someone, I believe it was Michael, talking yesterday about it appears we are all doing the same thing, but each one of us sitting, manifesting our whole life in our posture and in our breath. And so this work of Zen is not about projecting something, not about improving something, but about allowing something, allowing yourself, as we say, to know what you know, allowing yourself to be with what is here. A friend was going for a hike in the mountains, and we were talking about it, and she was saying that she really wanted to take in the mountains. She really wanted to perceive the mountains as mountains, to open up, and a wonderful wish for all of us in the mountains or on the city street to receive. And my encouragement to her was to let the mountains see her. As you walk through your life, can you allow yourself to be seen? And this is perhaps the only gift you have to give. is yourself, is who you are, this gift that is so hard to appreciate, so hard to realize. We're so taught that it should be something else. Being seen through and obtain the unobtainable opportunity. Obtain the unattainable opportunity. So lovely. This unattainable, this ungraspable. How do I get it? By allowing yourself to be seen, by doing nothing, by surrendering. Laying down your sword and shield. And of course, this is requires great courage. We have relied on the old techniques for so long, for so many decades, all of us here. And thank goodness for the old strategies and the old armor that we bring with us, because it got us here. Well done. But now this possibility of giving up the battle. In the koan, Guishan, the great Guishan, we can assume he was quite old at this time, quite a Zen success. He was quite revered in many Dharma heirs. And his Dharma heir and good friend, Liu, comes to visit him. And they greet each other. He greets her. You've come, old cow. You've come, dear friend. Here, complete interaction. And she doesn't get lost in the greeting. She... clear and steadfast, does not get lost in small talk, but immediately invites her teacher to the feast, hundreds of miles away at the mountain where Manjushri is revered. I want to go to the party at Manjushri's place with me. Quite a lovely invitation to invite her dear teacher, come play. But how can we get to the party hundreds of miles away this evening? And Guishan lies down. This lying down, many of the commentators have a lot of appreciation for this. And Yamada, one 20th century Zen teacher, said Guishan's lying down reminds him of a saying by a poet, old and tottering, lazy and loafing, this man has nothing to do. An idle one lies in a drowsy sleep. Old and tottering, lazy and loafing, this man has nothing to do. An idle one lies in a drowsy sleep facing the blue mountains. So this lying down, again, Guishan and Liu having an encounter here, a genuine encounter, some genuine meeting going on, but at each step the meeting is complete. Because neither one of these great worthies is trying to accomplish anything. Guishan lies down. Quite a radical act to do when we're in the middle of it, when we've got a point we want to make and want to make sure that the person we're with or the people we're with understand the point we're trying to make. This possibility for Guishan, this enlightened activity. What will you be able to do after you get Maha Kensho? You will be able to lie down. to lie down in the middle. In the middle of the conversation, he lies down to put it down, to let it be. Liu herself doesn't need to wonder, doesn't need to make a big deal or take it one way or the other. Complete action lying down. And she leaves. She turns and leaves. I was so struck in our Dharma dialogue yesterday by the power of this. Not as a closing of the heart, because of course we can leave. Here in the Zendo, we can still be sitting here, but we can close up shop and go out the back of our head for a cigarette. I'm tired of this Zen stuff. I'm going to have a little break here, right? The body's still here, looking good. Yeah, looking good. But you have left, right? In the middle of a relationship, you can walk out the door without walking out the door. Many ways to shut off, to defend. And it is truly the near enemy of this kind of letting be. Hungzhir, in this wonderful guidepost for silent illumination we read earlier, he said, responding without falling into achievement, speaking without involving listeners, the 10,000 forms majestically glisten and expound the Dharma. So responding without falling into achievement. So we're not talking about a world, a solitary world of kind of weird Zen activity. That is quite a mistaken view here. But we are talking about responding without an ulterior motive. Can we respond with the truth of the experience, and can we respond in a way that is as straightforward as we can make it? This is the truth, and this possibility of the freedom of Liu leaving, not in order to, well, I'll leave now and then he'll come chasing after me. Leaving not as a strategy, lying down not as a strategy, but the fullness of each moment presented time after time. Hungzhir goes on to say, all objects certify it, everyone in dialogue. So this certifying, you are it. Everything is complete. You are alone in the universe. And yet we are in dialogue. We are in relationship, independent, and yet working together. And I think this independence and working together is demonstrated here in this very simple interaction between these two people of the way. Be seen through and obtain the unattainable opportunity. Only then will you have met a true master of the way. So only then. So how do you meet a true master of the way? Go on YouTube and Google True Master of the Way. Maybe you can get into the seminar. Of course, so beyond that, and how do we meet? We meet a True Master of the Way by allowing ourselves to be seen through. In some ways, this practice, I think of a grinding down. I think Melissa was talking about this grinding down, and you had this reputation for being grinding her students. And we, of course, are being ground down here as we practice grinding down. Hongzhi says elsewhere, you must purify, grind down, brush away all the tendencies you have fabricated into apparent habits. There is a part of our practice that is totally immediate and totally accomplished. One breath of Zazen is enough. And yet there is also this ongoing, lifelong, never-ending practice of slowly seeing through, slowly the changes that this practice brings to us, very subtle and happened only over time, only over this long commitment and sitting in this room. Wonderful to be here. Each one of you has made some kind of long-term commitment and have been at this. This is not your first rodeo here. And we come back, I remember in my one of my first retreats many years ago now in Kinin, every time we'd go by the altar, I would hope that something would happen. So I'd sort of walk around and be waiting and waiting and waiting. And then I'd walk by the altar and be ready for the great Zen thing to happen. But it never happened. Apparently we were just walking. That was kind of lost on me. I thought we were doing something else. But for some reason, this practice has touched you, has hooked you. And you may think it's fun to practice, or you may think it's like taking medicine, or you may think it's both. But you come back. This is a demonstration of great love and great determination in this life of so many competing values, so many pulls. Do this, be that, accomplish this, make, fix this. And so my great appreciation for you to make this this really bad choice, right? Because nothing's going to happen when you walk by the altar, right? But yet maybe we can see that it is already happening, and when we wait for it to happen somewhere else, we kind of miss the unattainable opportunity. Only then, only when you are seen through, will you have met a true master of the way. Of course, this true master of the way is sitting on your cushion, is eating your food, is breathing your breath. How wonderful. Thank you. So please sit comfortably, and people by our servers, please come in front of the altar. So, how is it for you? Yeah, Zeph.
No idea. I couldn't have had the ugly.
I didn't hear a lot of that.
Oh, the good, the bad, and the ugly. You know, with the I'm the one that flinched.
You flinched. Yeah, yeah.
23 persons there now.
Yeah.
Thank you for your talk. It was just for me. It was one of those, so I really appreciate it.
And what did you hear? What touched you?
I already forget. But it touched me anyway. Many different things. We talked just about my life and the people.
So I'm going to push a little bit. How about one
sure.
thing, right?
There's a personal relationship, and it's very confusing. I'm adding some confusion, but the other person also is fantastic at creating lots of confusion. Poor communicator. So, you know, fantastic Dharma Gate relationship, which isn't much consolation. Very much an encouragement to see, be seen, you know, it's just like, and it's different every day.
Yeah.
And just show up for work.
Yeah.
That's a great phrase. I remember our first teacher used to love the Dunkin' Donuts commercial. So this, we're talking 35, 40 years ago, you know, time to get up and make the donuts. He said, that's the description of his own practice. And I think that's exactly what you're saying. So, yeah, there's a koan where, you know, why do you put on your seven-piece robe at the sound of the bell? A really good answer to that would be, time to get up, make the donuts. Just show up for work. Show up for this amazing practice.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Steph. Ann?
Mine's just a particular question. Thank you for your talk. But this lying down, I always saw as adamant, rather than just saying no.
Lying down is what? Adamant?
I never remember the names.
Guisha,
instead of just saying, I don't want to go, he lays down. It's an adamant response. Uh-huh. It's like, you're not going to get me out of this room. But the way you described it was not that way at all. It was more thoughtful.
Well, of course, we're all dreaming into this.
That's true.
Right?
But you were encouraging it.
Yeah, no. So not a bad thing, you know. And maybe there are times when it's important to lie down, not just to say, I'm not going, but to give a demonstration of that. You know, when people keep badgering us to do something or other, you know, I don't want to. What is it that, what's the action that can be taken to demonstrate? And we don't know his state of mind, but as I dream into him, I don't think he was opposing.
Yeah.
Right? He might have been inviting us to look at where the party really is. Right? Yeah. Adam.
I was going to say, now I feel seen because I still to this day use that phrase, time to make the donuts. It's something I got to get out of bed. thank you for that. Something came up for me when you were mentioning the speaking without listeners. And it made me realize that there are times, or experiences that I've had where I've felt seen without a seer, you know, by being by myself and having like sort of a moment where I sort of feel like I see through something or see through myself, but there's no one else around, at least I tell myself, but of course there's always, everyone is always around. Mm-hmm. So the speaking without listeners just made me think that it's possible to be seen all the time. You just have to show up to be seen properly, I guess. But just that phrase really hooked me for some reason, speaking without listeners.
Yeah, speaking without involving listeners, he says, yeah.
Well, you know, it reminds me of what Christine was talking about yesterday, you know, that not doing things for others. But I think there are parts of the self that are often, if not always, observing. And so to recognize when you're all alone and there are no listeners and no viewers, and you know, and you feel that feeling, to wonder, or to use David's phrase, to dream into, what is this? Mm-hmm. You know, not just settle for what you think it is. And that's why, you know, you can definitely see why there's theism, because that feeling of being observed, mm-hmm. it seems like there's somebody watching. But could it be that there is no one watching except this part of the self that takes itself out and is judging, observing, making comments, you know? I don't know about you, but part of my mind is often judging myself, right? It's one of my forms of thoughts. It's very familiar. Mm-hmm. And in Zazen, to just see it without any external object making that happen is very interesting. You know, do we have a choice? I think we have a choice to let it go, like the background noise in the party. Right. And then maybe there's something more important here.
It reminds me too of feeling lonely. Mm-hmm. We can feel lonely in the midst of many people. Mm-hmm. And we can feel lonely by ourselves, and by ourselves we can feel completely at home, right, and held by life. Yeah. Good. Thanks. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
What came up for me was the relationship of these two, and wondering, so he lays down, but it may be like, let's spend some time here together. You know, we have a relationship and let's be together. Mm. And she decides, like, well, I'm still going to go to the party. But, you know, it reminded me of, like, if sometimes Matt says, let's go out, and I'm like, no, I'm going to make dinner, and we're going to sit by the fire. And, you know, there doesn't have to be a lot of words, and it just feels like being seen as something about without words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if there doesn't need to be a lot of words, maybe, too, there doesn't need to be a lot of time. And so just in that moment of his flopping down and her lingering for a moment before turning and walking out, they got everything that they needed. The party took place.
Yes.
And what a wild party it was.
They're still telling stories about it. Well, you know what, and I think, too, I'm struck so much by what you said, Anne, what Adam said, and what David keeps saying about dreaming in. If any of you have attended a koan salon or a koan cafe, you know that is exactly the instruction. Mm. You dream into the koan, and everything you experience in it is true. Right? You don't have to make up some highfalutin poem and prepare it for, you know, days before coming to Doksan. Right in the moment, the dream is valid. So Anne has one feeling about the lying down. You have another feeling about the lying down. Adam has a feeling about no listeners. Yes, yes, yes. this is the invitation. And for me, this is the practice in seeing all the parts of the self that are constantly jabbering at each other. Right? And to be able to do it instantaneously. That's what I love. For me, what I dream into with these two people is no hesitation. Flop down on the floor, go out the door. and so everybody's view is that.
Mm-hmm. And there's one commentator that says, you know, wonderful, he flops down on the floor. It's Yamada. He says, but of course, to stay down on the floor is a mistake. Mm-hmm. Then you give up your life. So what do you do next, right? Mm-hmm. This is not the winning strategy. Right? This is a response to the moment. Yeah. So, Ray.
I love what everyone has just said. I look at koan as, for me, as an invitation to intimacy. And so that's the essence of their relationship. And it's beautiful, it's simple. And it's a real teaching for me, because I think that intimacy between people and with things needs to look a certain way. And that it's gotta, you know, it's gotta, it can't be superficial talk. It's gotta be deep talk. Right, otherwise it's not intimate. It's not, but seeing, so without, so letting go of all my conditioning around it's gotta be a certain way, people gotta look, talk a certain way and do a certain thing, is, and the invitation to see myself, is to see that too as it, as whatever people are saying, whatever their story is, it's an invitation to intimacy for me in relationship to them.
Yeah. I appreciate you talking about these preconceptions we have. My father was a New Age therapist at the latter part of his life, and his way was about hugging. And so when you met some, you were supposed to hug them, and there's a very particular way you would hug. You know, there are good hugs and bad hugs, and that this, if you didn't do it, you were kind of a bad person if you didn't hug in the right way. But it was just so clear that this did not, this was not actually meeting, this was a formula. And you know, maybe it's really meeting, but didn't seem that way to me, and that it's much more subtle and always there. You know, what do I have to do to be more intimate? Nothing, right? But I think what you're saying, when we approach it that way, right, we can notice our own preferences and I love to, let's really get down and talk about it. And so some of us love to do that. We're kind of intensity junkies, right? But yeah, it's a little colder today, isn't it? Yeah, it is, right? Just enough. Thanks. Will.
All right, just I keep wanting to come back to the point that you and Alan both made, which is that she's not going to this party, not in any direct sense. It's hundreds of miles away. So it's not like, you know, your partner. I mean, it's, in a certain way, it's not like somebody saying, oh, let's go out, and you're like, oh, no, I just want to lie down. Because the let's go out isn't possible, right? Mm. It's absolutely not. So where's she going when she goes out, right? Mm. And somehow that really changes the lying down for me too, right? You know, if there were a party next door, it would, might mean one thing, but there isn't. And if it's really associated with Manjushri, it's probably a legendary party and not even a real party. So it's all sort of mythic somehow. You know, so I love that, actually. I mean, it is harder to, of course, the understanding sort of breaks on it, right? You can't, what does she mean inviting him to something that neither of them can go to, right?
Right.
Well, and there is, I'm so delighted that you're tasting this mythic quality,
yeah.
Because there's another way of understanding where Mount Taishan is.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes it's considered the center of the universe.
Uh-huh.
And there's another koan also involving a woman, where every time a monk goes to see this woman, the monk says, what is the way to Mount Tai? Shan means
mountain.
Right. So Taishan, what is the way to Taishan? Uh-huh. And she says, just go straight ahead.
He
starts walking. And she says, oh, good, respectable monk. he too goes on like that.
He needed to
You know, people complain about her, right? She's one of the unnamed people. And when Jiajo hears about it, I think it's Jiajo, he says, I'll go, or maybe it's Nanchuan, I'll go investigate this old woman for you. Same exact thing happens. He comes back and he says to all the students, I've investigated the old woman for you. And one of the, that's all he says, one of the parts of that is, where is Mount Taishan? Where is the center of the universe? So I hadn't actually made that connection until you said that, but
just lie right down, you know, whatever you're doing. And she's saying, you know, just go straight ahead. And some, I once was working with somebody on this call, and this is not the standard answer, but it's kind of like a koan salon, koan cafe type answer, which I just love. She has so much insight, right? Somebody said, well, the old woman is standing right in front of the monk. So if he just goes straight ahead, he'll bump into her. Maybe one of you said that. I don't know. Oh, my goodness. Yes. It's right here the whole time. There's nowhere else. So then you can see this play between them quite differently. Yeah. All right. Bye-bye.
Steve in the back.
So how did this story get passed along? I mean, that's the dream.
Good question. Yeah. Like,
did she write this down, or did he write this down? I mean, who writes, you know, it's like, because there's only two characters in here. It's
yeah.
not like the, there's an unnamed monk
that right.
is involved. So I'm curious.
You said there's no unnamed monk.
Yes.
Right.
Right.
There's only these two characters,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
You know, I always think of Collins as gossip.
Gossip.
Right. So maybe Guishan mentioned it to somebody, maybe you mentioned it to somebody, got embroidered, it got fixed into a story. Because this is from the record of Guishan.
The old house stopped by the other day.
Yeah, did you? I heard this thing happened. Really? Wow. Do you understand it? No. On and on. So the record of Guishan has all these stories about Guishan, and there's no record of Liu, but she's in a bunch of other records because she keeps showing up with all these other teachers. So yeah, it's a great. Maybe somebody was watching through the window.
And there's also some research to show that not all of this is historically verified. I don't. That what we're working with in these Zen stories, one Buddhist scholar says, the more detail there is, the less likely it's true, and the more important it is. Right, so this mythic quality, this truth, we're in this realm of the Sambhogakaya appearing and disappearing. Who was there to watch? Well, you were, Steve. Mm-hmm. Right, there we are. Right? Thanks. Bill.
Yeah, I was intrigued by you talking about walking by the altar and expecting something magical to happen. And you know, funny enough, that happened to me as well. But instead of magic, it's sore knees.
Okay.
And so maybe that's the...
All right, okay, the there magic. You go.
It's a form of magic.
Yeah. I mean, the whole sesshin is a form of magic. It's all unpredictable, and it's crazy, and it's chaotic, and it's wonderful, and it's form-like, and it's all these sort of things that are happening.
Right.
But yet, that is maybe what I'm looking for. Is that?
Well, and a little bit like what Ray was saying, we all have an image of, I've read about enlightenment, I'm quite clear what it's going to be like, thank you very much, and I don't want anything else, right? And
right.
So then we miss the sore knees, we miss the creaking of the floor, we miss the breathing in and out. Yeah, great, thanks.
There's a way in which the first couple of years of Zen practice can be sitting on the cushion thinking something's going to happen.
Yeah.
Something's going to happen. Right. And after a couple of years, he realized, oh, wow, that's what happened.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe one more, Michael.
I love what you said to that woman, let the mountain see you.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, yeah. And when the mountain sees me, I am the mountain.
Right. Then we drop away, and that there is something, some direction to move in, this allowing ourselves to be seen.
Yeah.
Right? It's kind of doing nothing, but I guess it's partly becoming conscious of how much we're doing all the time, the protection, the storytelling business. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm taking a walk outside now, and I hope I'm taking the right kind of walk, and da-da-da. And this... this possibility of letting that drop, and then, you know, mountain, you, the universe, you, all beings, you, somehow we don't have to talk about that kind of nonsense anymore.
It's more poetic when you say a mountain, but less so when you say other people.
Yeah.
Or a stuffed up toilet. It doesn't feel so, or sore knees.
Yeah.
Yeah. To not exclude anything is so important.
Yeah. Well, let's continue our unattainable practice.